stupid.
Live from New York City, it's the Gary Noel Show. And now, your host, Gary Noel.
Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Noel, broadcasting live and video streaming from our studios in New York City. And I welcome all of you from all over the world and from all the different stations that are carrying this program. Today, we're going to explore looking at the future of civil society, setting a new agenda for those of us who believe that we have an opportunity for positive change, even in the middle of a lot of crisis. My guest will be Dr. Jill Stein, a medical physician of internal medicine and a person advocating environmental health. And last November, she was the presidential candidate for the Green Party. Many may remember her having been arrested for not being permitted attendance to the Obama-Romney debate, and then later her arrest for supporting protesters and bringing food and against the Keystone Pipeline in Texas. She is a Harvard Magna Cum Laude graduate and received her doctorate from Harvard Medical School. She'll be with us. Also today, a comment on banning Mike Adams in Natural News, Facebook did. Why? We'll take a look at that. Also, from Dr. Joseph Marcola, a list of the healthiest countries in the world. Guess which one's not there? And from our issue segment, how can we trust what anyone in the media is telling us about anything since so many universities have sold out? Hence from when Noah Hunter, Executive Director of Food and Water Watch, university research sold out. The energy industry and big agribusiness are distorting academic research by wielding corporate influence. And then, as I do each year, I will give you a look back at what I was able to focus on and accomplish this year and what I'm hopeful to do in the upcoming year. I will also be opening up our calls on one topic only today in TalkBack. What have you done this year personally to make it a better world for others? What have you done to make major changes in your life that have helped you transcend disease or depression or anything that had kept you limited? So your turn to talk about the changes you've made, the strides you're taking, the new direction that you are engaged in. That'll be our only topic for TalkBack. And I'm going to open that up for TalkBack in about 10 minutes, right after my health and nutrition information. But let's go to health and nutrition, as we do every day. I've been asked many times, as a vegetarian, as a vegan, what proof is there that vegetarians or vegans live a longer life? And that's generally asked by someone who's a meat eater who doesn't believe that there's any literature proving that. Wrong. There's abundant literature. In the near future, probably in the spring, I will have a major, major book and a full documentary. The documentary's done. It's just sitting waiting on the shelf until the book arrives. It's all about how to be a healthy vegetarian. In there, we look at only peer-reviewed literature to support why making a healthy vegan, because you could be an unhealthy vegan. You could eat pizzas all day without salami, and you could say, "Well, I'm a vegan." Yes, but you could eat sugar and be unhealthy. Drink coffee and sodas and be unhealthy. I'm talking about the kind of veganism we offer: healthy living foods. Here is the latest to support that you are going to add if you're a healthy vegan, about 9.5 years onto your lifespan. That's 9.5 years without being overweight, without the high index of body fat, without the heart disease and cancer. All of the studies show that a healthy vegan, those who eat the most fruits and vegetables and grains, nuts and seeds, have less of all that. This is the latest, and this is from the Times of India. Quote, "Being vegetarian may give you more health benefits than eating meat," Loma Linda University study show. Now, Loma Linda University was given a grant way back in 1958 to start tracking the lifestyles of Seventh-day Adventists, tens of thousands of them. In fact, 96,000 are in their study. The studies looked at the kind of foods and the consumption patterns of foods and how much the fruits and vegetables and nuts and legumes and grains, and then what impact did that have on a person's disease, like cancer, heart disease, and type 2 diabetes, and obesity, waist size, and brain health. Loma Linda University was sponsored by the National Institutes of Health on this study. They have published on a regular basis. The latest shows that the average vegetarian man lives 83.3 years, a woman 85.7 years, or 9.5 years longer than other people in California. They have 30 pounds less weight than meat eaters. They have 5 units lighter at the BMI scale than meat eaters. That's a big thing. And they also have better insulin than levels of meat eaters. So being lean, exercising regularly, eating plants, avoiding being overweight, all of those provide a longer lifespan. And that does not take into account other studies that show that as you take supplements like vitamin C and your antioxidants, that adds on life substantially. Coenzyme Q10, vitamin C, and vitamin E all extend lifespan. Then there are other studies, especially in the 2000 peer-reviewed articles on psychoneuroimmunology. Psycho, the mind, neuro, the central nervous system, and immunology, your immune system, that if you are able to keep de-stressed, if you do yoga and meditation and prayer and journal writing, any of the different things people do, that lends length to your lifespan. So there's no reason that based upon the cumulative impact of living a very healthy lifestyle and exercising, that you can add 15 years to 20 years onto your lifespan. Now, let's say that you would be a healthy vegetarian. They don't include juicing in there. They don't include the compounding powders of the greens and the reds, which give you 5, 10, 20 times more healing of the DNA nutrients than just eating vegetables and fruits by themselves. So there's a lot of new science that needs to be done. There's a whole new set of criteria that needs to be evaluated. There's really no reason that someone, unless there's extenuating circumstances, which there can be, shouldn't be able today, with what we know, to live to be a healthy, healthy, vital, young-looking 100 years old. Next up, gardening can make you happier. Now, for those of you, and there are millions out there who do gardening in their backyard, this is the latest, and it says, are you tired combating the daily stress? Gardening can help. From Tamil Nadu News in India, the daily grind can really take a toll on you and make your life stressful and unhappy. Of course, regular yoga and meditation can help immensely, but then not everybody can do that. Sometimes opting for something as simple as planting a simple vegetable can make you feel better and de-stress you. Doesn't sound convincing enough? Try it for a few weeks and see the difference it makes. Quote, there are people who take an interest in gardening as it gives them the satisfaction of seeing their flowers, fruits, and vegetables grow. And some do it to show off their gardening to others. However, gardening does benefit us in many ways. According to the latest research, gardening is known to have a therapeutic effect on our stressed lives. It helps us wind down, and that particular feeling of having created something is a powerful elixir. So, and it also, by the when you're actually really gardening, you're bending down all the time and picking things up and moving and lifting. That's physical activity. And the digging, the chopping, the hitting, and hitting motions are cathartic and help us to release a lot of our pent-up negative energy. And while guarding all that closeness with Mother Nature, the feel of wet soil on your skin while you work with your hands leaves a soothing and calming effect on the entire nervous system that in turn helps in easing out tensions. And your gardening can prove to be extremely inspiring with beautiful colors and shades of flowers and leaves, and the interesting smells prove to be inspiring. It can uplift your mood and fill you with positivity. And also, being a creator, when you plant, you get that feel of starting a new life, and it makes you feel responsible for well-being. Taking care, watering, makes you feel as if you're providing, and you then feel responsible. And don't for a second think that the plants that you're working with don't pay attention to that. They feel it. There's a communication. If you go up to GaryNoll.com and look under photographs, you'll see soil, that fields that were just plain, and then you'll see gardens. And in that garden, you'll see naked soil, then you'll see the development of the soil, then seeds being planted, then microgreens and full vegetables, and then recycling all that wasn't used back into nature. All that is nurturing. Not only do you feed yourself and friends and family, but you're also able to feel good in the process. That's why I highly recommend gardening to everyone. Have you noticed how many kids today in school or at home have a hard time with speech? I have a lot of school teachers who are listening to this program, and when I communicate with them, they tell me about the issues going on in school. For example, they were the first to tell me 4 years ago that a lot of kids were coming to school who couldn't focus, didn't have any energy, because they hadn't eaten breakfast, nor in many cases dinner the night before. They simply didn't have the money. And so these teachers, being extremely caring and nurturing, they would take money out of their own pocket and buy a child, you know, some food. So that's how I found out about how many kids were going to school hungry. And then when I looked at the national statistics, it's 18 million, probably higher now. But then there's a case of speech. This is the latest on this, and I'll quote this. It says, a large study has revealed that the number of children with speech difficulties has increased by 70% in 6 years. The study published by the Department of Education blames growing use of screened based gadgets as convenient babysitters and a trend for hardworking parents to spend less time with their children for the rise. The government-funded study revealed that the number of school children needing expert help for speech and language difficulties rose 71% since 2005. And the analysis, part of a Better Communications research program, found that the youngsters age 5 to 16 were classed as having difficulties, and a lot of them. So once again, when we all learn phonics and we learn speech, and we were given time and attention by our parents, made all the difference in the world. But today, kids are given television and, as they say, gadgets. And that is not a good substitute for the human-being interface. And finally, our body's food clock gets upset with holiday overindulgences. This is from Medical News Today, and it's the Proceedings of the National Academy of Science based upon University of California, San Francisco study. Here's what it says. I'll quote it. Overindulgence during this feasting season can play havoc with the human body's food clock. Overeating, changing sleeping patterns, and significant changes in eating habits over the holiday period can upset the food clock, a collection of genes and molecules that interact with one another and keep the human body on a metabolic even keel. If our eating habit change, a PKCY, a protein, is crucial in resetting the food clock. And otherwise, we end up with desynchronized food clock, and then that can lead to chronic diseases and disorders. And that's particularly true for night owls, people working night shifts, and people who are sleeping too much. So then the question is, all right, most people overeat from Thanksgiving through New Year's Eve, and they overdrink. And a lot of times, especially over the holiday season, they stay up late. Fine. So what do you do? Well, I'm not suggesting that you change your social patterns. I'm suggesting then that you take 1 week at the beginning of the new year. Let's say start on New Year's Day and do a modified fast. This will help reset your clock, where you take melatonin in the evening, 1 to 3 milligrams, about an hour before you go to bed. Sleep in total darkness. That's important. And use earplugs so you have total silence. But by drinking lots of water each day with some lemon juice, fresh squeezed lemon juice. Generally, the amount of lemon juice should be 1 lemon per 16-ounce glass of juice or water. Now, that is important in helping to reset our metabolism, cleansing and detoxifying. And then have 3 protein shakes a day. That'll give you your 40 to 60 grams of protein. And that gives you what your body needs, because everybody's got extra body fat. So your body will be burning some of this extra fat. Your body will reset its food clock and then get back to eating what you had before that was healthy in the time period you eat. And don't overeat. I'm Gary Nall. Back in a moment. Please stay with us.
Never saw you look quite so pretty before. Never saw you dress quite so handsome. What's more, I could hardly wait to keep our date this lovely Easter morning. And my heart beat fast as I came through the door. For in your Easter...
Nice to have you with us today, everyone. I'm Gary Nall. In a few moments, Dr. Jill Stein, what we can do to build a better world. Also coming up in a few moments, Mike Adams, Natural News Editor. Facebook bans Gandhi quote as a part of revisionist history purge, and a commentary from Dr. Joseph Marcola about the healthiest countries in the world and why. Before we go there, however, once a week we take just 2 to 3 minutes to offer you a premium. And all the money goes to this station. And the good news is that not a single one of the 80 hosts on 24/7 broadcasting on the Progressive Radio Network has to ever raise a nickel. So the whole concept works. And I always try to offer something special. Well, I'm going to offer something really super special today. And this is for all of you who want to start the new year detoxing, rebalancing yourself, and really super potentizing your body with the best possible nutrients. This is an invention of mine. It's a big 2.5-pound jar, a month's servings of a natural protein. Now, why is this special? Why should you be interested? First, because it's raw. That's powerful. It's vegan. There's no GMOs. It's gluten-free. It's certified organic. And there's 5,000 ORAC per serving antioxidants. This is what is called Muscle Stuff Extra. Now, what are the ingredients in this to make this so special? With only 151 calorie and no saturated fat, no cholesterol, no sodium, 2 grams of fiber, but 21 grams of high-quality protein. Here are the ingredients. Now, I don't want to say organic after every ingredient, but these are all organic. Organic brown rice protein and pea protein and cocoa and flaxseed, and chocolate, and Lactobacillus acidophilus, non-dairy, and magnesium, and stevia, and potassium, and biotin, vitamin C, and resveratrol, wild blueberry, a grape extract, and grape seed extract, and raspberry extract, and raspberry seed extract, and cranberry, and prune, and cherry extracts, and wild bilberry extract, strawberry, zinc, vitamin D, D-alpha-tocopherol, which is vitamin E, and amylase, your digestive enzymes, lipase, amylase, protease, cellulase, beta-carotene, and manganese, and riboflavin, B1, B2, B6, chromium, vitamin B12, folic acid. All that is in here. It just doesn't get any better. So for all of you who care about your health, each day have this in the morning to get yourself started. Probiotics, antioxidants, minerals, vitamins, quality protein, organic. Now, normally, you would pay one price, but I'm throwing in as to start the new year, because you're going to need this, detoxification and natural approach. This is the two-hour DVD on how we get sick, how we can cleanse our body, how we can rebalance our body, how we can detoxify step by step. 2 hours. It's a DVD. The two together should be $200. They're $99.99. Saving $100, give a call. 877-627-5065. 877-627-5065. 877-627-5065 for the Muscle Stuff Extra. A new formula, and it's got everything you could imagine to want to start the body getting itself back into balance, getting healthy, and it's there for you, and you save $100. How about that to start the new year? 877-627-5065. Now, for those of you who've made changes in the past 12 months, for those of you who've stepped out of your normal role in life and began to look at the interests of others and help others through participating in social issues, for those of you who've overcome crisis and tragedy and are back on the road to recovery, now's your time to share your thoughts. Talk back on changes for this year. 888-874-4888. 888-874-4888. Now, before we go to Dr. Stein, a commentary and a thought. First from Mike Adams. I'll quote him. The reports are absolutely true. Facebook suspended the Natural News account early today after we posted a historical quote from Gandhi. The quote reads, quote, "Among the many misdeeds of the British rule in India, history will look upon the act of depriving a whole nation of arms as the blackest." End quote. That was Mahatma Gandhi in his autobiography, page 446. This historical quote was apparently too much for Facebook censors to bear. They suspended our account and gave us a final warning that one more violation of their so-called community guidelines would result in our account being permanently deactivated. They then demanded we send them a color copy of a government-issued identification in order to reactivate our account. Our account was removed from suspension just minutes before InfoWorlds posted its article on this Facebook censorship, and the Facebook page is now functioning at facebook.com/naturalnews. This is a separate account from our primary Facebook account, which has nearly 250,000 followers. That Facebook would choose to disable our account after we posted a Mahatma Gandhi quote is incredibly shocking. The historical rise of oppression in India against its people, against tyrannical British rule, is apparently no longer allowed to be discussed on Facebook. The very idea of a free people overcoming tyrannical government rule now, quote, violates community guidelines. The removal of this content is akin to online book burning and the destruction of history. This post was not in any way malicious, nor encouraging violence, nor even describing guns or the Second Amendment. It merely reflected the words of one of our world's most celebrated rebel leaders who helped an entire nation throw off the shackles of oppression and British occupation. That Facebook would find this a, quote, violate community guidelines is nothing short of absolutely bewildering. And then it goes on to talk about this. Now, on top of that, InfoWorlds is now reporting that Facebook is running an across-the-board purge of all pro-gun accounts, A huge number of accounts are being systematically disabled or suspended, with all content being wiped clean. We have entered an era of Ministry of Truth from George Orwell's 1984 novel. And while Facebook assaults the First Amendment in America, Senator Feinstein is busy assaulting the Second. What's especially alarming about all this is that Gandhi himself was, of course, a champion of resistance against tyranny. To banish quotes from Gandhi is much like banning quotes of freedom from Martin Luther King, who also openly supported concealed firearms, by the way, and who personally owned an entire group of firearms. What's next? Will Facebook ban quotes by Thomas Jefferson and George Washington? Any and all patriots, founding fathers, and liberty lovers throughout history might soon be stricken from Facebook servers, and any who dare to post historical quotes supporting them, liberty, the Bill of Rights, or the Second Amendment, risk having their accounts terminated and all content deleted. Collectivist propaganda has now reached a point where you can't even discuss liberty or anything out of history that supported the right to keep bare arms. You're required to stay focused solely upon celebrating gossip, sports stars, fashion distractions, and tabloid garbage. End quote. Your thoughts on that? This is from Dr. Joseph Marcola. List of the top healthiest countries in the world. It does not include the United States. This is short, and then from here we go to our guest, Jill Stein. The United States spends $2.7 trillion annually, twice the amount per person as any other industrialized nation, on health care. With this level of spending, you might think Americans would be among the healthiest people on the planet. Unfortunately, this is not the case. Japan tops the list of healthiest countries. The Global Burden of Disease Study, which assessed health and disease trends in 187 countries, and is said to be the largest ever systematic effort to describe the global distribution and causes of a wide array of major diseases, injuries, and health risks, released its rankings of the top 10 countries with the highest life expectancies. We didn't even make the cut. We weren't even close. For male life expectancy, the U.S. was ranked 29th, and while for female life expectancy, 33rd. Now, where are the healthiest places in the world to live the longest life? Well, Japan is number one, then Singapore, Switzerland, Spain, Italy, Australia, Canada, Andorra, Israel, and South Korea. For men. For women, Japan, South Korea, Spain, Singapore, Thailand, Switzerland, Andorra, Italy, Australia, and France. What's Japan's secret? As for the why, the Japanese are the longest-lived race on the planet. They also rank healthiest. The researchers couldn't say exactly, although Harvard School of Public Health professor Joshua Solomon, one of the study's lead investigators, noted, quote, it's likely a combination of factors, healthy lifestyle, including diet. Indeed, at least one secret is likely that their diets are naturally high in omega-3 fatty acids, a nutrient Americans are deficient in. And according to Dr. William Harris, an expert on omega-3 fats, those who have an omega-3 index of less than 4% than age-adjusted are not going to be that healthy. In general, the Japanese also enjoy fermented foods like natto, which contains beneficial microbes that help balance your intestinal flora and also are very high in vitamin K, therefore boosting overall immunity far more than the average American. And while health risks like infectious disease and malnutrition are causing fewer deaths across the board than they have in decades, other more insidious causes of death like chronic disease have taken their place in many countries, including the United States, where heart disease and cancer make up the two leading causes of death. Meanwhile, as a global population, we are getting sicker, not healthier. As although life expectancy has mostly risen, more of those years are being spent in poor health or disability. The Lancet reports, quote, the results show that infectious diseases, maternal and child illnesses, and malnutrition now cause fewer deaths and less illness than they did 20 years ago. As a result, fewer children are dying every year, but more young and middle-aged adults are dying and suffering from diseases and injury, as non-communicable diseases such as cancer and heart disease become the dominant causes of death and disability worldwide. Since 1970, Men and women worldwide have gained slightly more than 10 years of life expectancy overall. Why isn't life expectancy higher in the United States? Using life expectancy as a barometer for the return of our healthcare investment shows us that this expenditure is entirely in vain. Other countries that spend far less are outpacing its life expectancy by leaps and bounds. What's the problem? Well, for starters, the U.S. healthcare system has a tremendous amount of waste. A recent review of U.S. healthcare expenses by the Institute of Medicine revealed that 30 cents of every dollar spent on medical care is wasted. That's $750 billion a year. And six areas of waste identified are unnecessary services and $210 billion, inefficient delivery of care, $130 billion, excess administration costs, $190 billion, inflated prices, $105 billion, improper payments, $70 billion, and fraud, $75 billion. Meanwhile, statistics also tell us that the U.S. healthcare system itself may be one of the greatest health threats facing us today. Over a decade ago, Dr. Bruce Pomerantz of the University of Toronto concluded that properly prescribed and correctly taken pharmaceutical drugs were the fourth leading cause of death in the United States. More recently, an article authored in two parts by Gary Null, Ph.D., Carolyn Dean, Martin Feldman, Deborah Rezio, MDs, Dorothy Smith, PhD, described in excruciating detail how the modern American conventional medical system has bumbled its way into becoming the leading cause of death and injury in the United States. From medical errors to adverse drug reactions to unnecessary procedures, heart disease, cancer deaths, and infant mortality, the authors took statistics straight from the most respected medical peer-reviewed scientific journals and investigative reports by the Institute of Medicine, and showed that on the whole, American medicine caused more harm than good. In 2010, years after the original article was written, an analysis in the New England Journal of Medicine found that despite efforts to improve patient safety in the past few years, the healthcare system hasn't changed much at all. Instead, from the journal, New England Journal of Medicine, quote, 18% of patients were harmed by medical care, some repeatedly, and over 63% of injuries could have been prevented. In nearly 2.5% of these cases, the problems caused or contributed to a person's death. Another 3% patients suffer from permanent injury, while over 8% experience life-threatening issues such as severe bleeding during surgery. In all, there were over 25 injuries per 100 admissions. Of course, there are many other factors involved in America's poor health life expectancy ratings, not the least of which is the standard American diet, which indirectly contributes to an untold number of deaths every year from obesity to chronic disease, end quote. Now let's go over and say hello to my guest who is standing by. I will hold off on review of the year and looking forward to the next so we can say hello to Dr. Jill Stein. I gave you her bio earlier in the program, so we will just say hello to her now. Nice to have you back with us today.
Hi, Gary. Are you hearing me?
I sure am.
Hi, it's great to be with you again.
Thank you. What I'd like for you to talk about, and I've set aside a lot of time for you to do that today, is that when people would tell me, especially the corporate Democrats, which represent the primary forces of MSNBC and the Rachel Maddow and Current TV, and versus the historical liberal community. These are the corporate liberals versus the more ideological and social issue liberals. And then on the right, the same way, the corporate Republicans versus the historical conservatives that held up family value principles, they would all say the same thing. Why are you having Jill Stein and Rocky Anderson and Gary Johnson and others on your program? A, they can't win anything. B, they'll probably collectively get less than 2% of the vote. C, they're out of touch with what Americans need and want. And you're going to help them maybe swing an election that Barack Obama should have or Romney should have to the other. All you're doing is doing the same thing that Ralph Nader did. My answer is this, and this will lead you into your discussion. First, I have never met anyone in my life, nor am I aware of any human being that's ever existed in the United States that has caused more laws to be passed to protect the environment and human beings than Ralph Nader. He is one person that has never compromised on issues. He is 100% populist. People can accept or reject his personality, but I happen to find him to be one of those unique human beings that we should pay attention to. Indeed, over 260 major laws and rules and actions and dozens of foundations and groups came about through him. Yet this is the very man who suddenly became obsolete to those liberals, at least those corporate liberals, who didn't see the glitz and the glamour and the sexiness that a Bill Clinton would have, or later that an Al Gore would have, or John Kerry. And yet what they represented was the corporate interests of the multinationals and not the average person. They were not for the poor and the working class and the middle class at all. Yet they said they were. They weren't for unions or the environment, and their actions show it. So I said, show me a single part of Jill Stein's platform or anything she's written or talked about that would hurt America. Now ask yourself, would anything Jill Stein or these other people say or do help America, help you, help with home foreclosures, help with stopping wars, help the demilitarization, help balance the budget in the right way, help stopping the welfare for major corporate interest? And that became the defining argument, that these were people who were by and large disconnected from any reality of what you stood for. And then I said, you realize, don't you, that, this was a conversation with a very famous liberal person that everyone in this audience would immediately know who this person was. I said, you're aware that more Americans are now independent than liberal and conservatives combined, and most of them are not going to vote, or they're going to vote for the independent. And I said, so when you hear Bill O'Reilly talking about, you know, Americans conservative, it's not. When you hear the other side say America's liberal, it's not. Most Americans are simply independent. They want the truth. That said, I told this audience repeatedly, don't look at this election as what is going to count. Look at the people in it as opening a door so after the election, in the next 4 years, as many people who can come together, forming a coalition of common interest where they leave their egos at the door. And those who can't leave the egos at the door will be repeating patterns of behavior that are not going to help anyone. Those who can and work together, we can now set the platform for the next election cycle. That's where we begin. Tell us what lessons have been learned from this last effort, yours and others, and what you see we should do to work together. If you see, I'm not going to put words in your mouth, maybe you disagree with me. If you do, then say that. But I see that we should be working together. I see that we should not exclude libertarians. I think that it was a terrible mistake to smack out of the concept, even discussing Ron Paul's 8 million young idealists, because they're going to be there, like it or not. Better to have them on your side agreeing what you can agree upon than those who would be against you. Those are my thoughts. Now the forum is yours to hear yours.
Thank you, Gary. And those are all really wonderful thoughts. And I'm so glad that you are raising this subject now. In the throes of a presidential election, or any election really, where money is pouring in, and we saw more money than ever, $6 billion that went into the last election on behalf of Democrats and Republicans, the big corporate money that poured in, the Wall Street, the health insurance, the war profiteers, the usual suspects who funded this election, funded a dialogue that said you only had those two choices, that resistance is futile. In the throes of that, it's very hard to have a rational conversation. And this is a really good time to have it. Because like you say, we've got 4 more years before the next presidential elections, 2 years before the next congressional, and so on. So it's a really good time to take stock. And going into the last race, 1 out of every 2 voters said they didn't like their choices, Democrats and Republicans. They wanted to have at least a third-party option, if not more than that. And we heard that strongly from people. We heard that people really supported a populist agenda of health care as a human right, that, you know, that was driven by our communities, by healthy communities and a healthy food supply and a healthy energy supply. We heard people saying the solution to the economy is jobs, especially green jobs. It's not more tax breaks for the wealthy. The solution to international conflict is not more war, more drone attacks, more missile defense systems, but rather negotiation, human rights, international law. We saw over and over that people, by large majorities, supported a populist agenda, demanded other choices, but as that $6 billion started pouring in, people were told they only had two choices, and progressives were told that Romney was the scariest thing in the world. He would do things like attack Medicare and Social Security, attack Iran, create more wars in the Middle East, and saber rattle against China. These are exactly the things that we're seeing the Obama administration do again. And we've seen Obama again abandon his populist agenda. This is deja vu moment right now. We remember how back in 2008 we'd seen Obama, you know, look like the populist candidate. But when he got in, you know, it was Larry Summers, it was Timothy Geithner, it was trillions in bailouts for Wall Street. Guess what? Those bailouts are still going on. $40 billion a month being spent right now to bail out the banks yet again and buy up their bad mortgage securities instead of bailing out the students who deserve to be bailed out, who didn't do anything to, you know, to get themselves into this mess. They did all the right things. We should be bailing out the students, providing free public higher education, moving to health care as a human right under a single-payer system with an emphasis on community-based health, healthy food, healthy energy, healthy active transportation. We should be moving to international diplomacy and international law and human rights instead of fomenting more wars, expanding the drone wars, attacking our civil liberties. You know, people may not know that while we were distracted, Obama signed into law new legislation that will allow the drones to come here. We're expected to have 30,000 drones in this country spying on Americans within the next 5 years. They went ahead and reauthorized the National Defense Authorization Act attack on our civil liberties, making indefinite detention a real possibility for any American, let alone non-American, can be thrown into jail without charge or trial. We are not moving in the right direction, not under the Democrats, not under the Republicans. Obama is not protecting Social Security. His recent compromise plan said, let's go ahead and dismantle Social Security, start eroding this critical social support. He's already, you know, gone on record unfunding Medicare to the tune of hundreds of billions of dollars instead of taxing the rich, having them pay their fair share, taxing capital gains like income, putting a small tax on Wall Street, bringing the troops home, going back to year 2005 military, which is still many times bigger, three times bigger than the next biggest military spender. Instead of squandering trillions on wars, Wall Street bailouts, and tax breaks for the wealthy, we can have a Green New Deal that creates jobs, provides health care to everyone as a human right, cleans up our energy supply, puts a halt to the climate catastrophe that Obama and company are barreling towards, despite their, you know, their window dressing of green energy projects. Green energy projects doesn't help you one bit if you're continuing to escalate your dirty energy, which is what Obama, like George Bush, has done, is doing. It's we the people that have the solutions here. It's very important to challenge this propaganda that silences the political voice of resistance. There's resistance going on now out in our communities for a healthy food system, for local, sustainable food sovereignty. There's resistance for real health care, which is based on prevention and nutrition, for real community-based jobs, for stopping the Keystone Pipeline and starting green energy. There is good stuff going on in our communities. There is a rebellion that's alive and well. It deserves a political voice, and we need to reject this propaganda that that we have to be quiet. If we accept that propaganda, we will continue on this trajectory towards catastrophe. We don't have much time to turn it around, and it's heroes like you, Gary Null, like real media advocates who are talking free speech, resurrecting free speech, and heroes in our community who are really establishing the way forward. And we need to keep on that track.
Thank you.
I'll turn it back to you.
All right. You touched upon there is no sustainable energy program in the United States that I can find that supports geothermal, yet we have tens of thousands of geothermal springs in the United States that have been shown to be able to support substantial energy to a local community. We also have done nothing to sponsor at the federal level the using of wave energy, and that's a major unlimited source of energy that's non-polluting. We have put too much emphasis upon the wind power, especially where it shouldn't be, in small, let's say, rural communities, instead of where it could be up in the Great Continental Divide, where at least it wouldn't be an environmental factor. And we have not looked at what the Germans and the Chinese are doing with solar, smaller units, more concentrated, longer lasting cell charge, and about one-third the cost of those done in the United States. So we're way behind on that. But more importantly, and I'm sure you were fully aware of this, during this last presidential election cycle, the president, the administration, and Congress did not discuss climate change. And at the same time, we read research and reports weekly about the impacts of climate change and how more dire the predictions are than previously thought. And then also the fact that other countries are making real concerted efforts to prepare themselves for worse scenarios to come. And yet here, when I was asking my own audience, are you prepared if there's an earthquake, if there is a defect and a fault in any of our nuclear power plants, if there is a solar storm that knocks out any of the grid, if there's a hurricane, you live near the ocean, are you prepared? Because we have not had a national dialogue on what we need to do to be prepared. And yet last year in the United States, we had over 11,000 and over 110,000 worldwide extreme events, meaning the records, the worst rain, the worst drought, the worst forest fires in New Mexico, Texas, and California, and Colorado and Oklahoma history. And now that's the new norm. Just last week, we had the most snow in the month of December in Arkansas in one day. Now the new extremes, Sandy, Category 1, and look at the devastation, $70 billion lost lives. And the government's response is, well, okay, we'll get to you as quickly as we can. They were not prepared at all. There were no port-a-sands, there was no bottled water, there was no emergency generators large enough to open a hospital electrical system. There was no backup sleeping units, there was no food, nothing. No backup gasoline in the areas most likely to have no gasoline. Everything that they could have done after 7 years after Katrina, they did nothing. Now, next year, according to the reports that I have reviewed, and I'm doing a documentary on this, I've been working for 7 years on the 12 tipping points. I have interviewed every climatologist, and they say we're now in chaos theory, meaning there is no accurate mathematical model anywhere on the planet to determine how fast the oceans are going to rise, how fast Greenland is melting, how fast Antarctica is melting. Just last week, the latest report came in that Greenland is melting 500% faster than what anyone anticipated, and that Antarctica is melting from a top and below at 200% greater speed than what we had anticipated. So all these old ideas. It'll take 100 years for the ocean to rise another 11 millimeters. So what? No big deal. Now we're looking at feet rising. We're looking at storms surges greater. So if a Category 1 Sandy could do the devastation it did, what will a Category 2, 3, 4, or 5 do if it hits next year, the year after, anywhere at the major areas up and down the East Coast? And one last thing, just 3 weeks ago in Fort Lauderdale, there was a news report. It did not make the national news, but here was a reporter for the local, I think it was CBS affiliate, out where there had been a beach, where there are thousands of high-rise condominiums on the ocean. The beach was gone. The palm trees behind the beach were gone. The parking lot was gone. The sidewalk with its meters were gone, and the highway was gone. What that said and what people were saying is nothing now will protect our buildings, and indeed they are correct, because every single building from South Beach, where I sold my place just this year, and way up, probably 30,000 apartment buildings at least, are built on sand, not stone. In New York, you build on stone. That's why we have to do so much blasting. So there's stability. Not so in Florida. All those concrete stanchions that go into the ground are on sand as a result. As the water comes in, as the surges come in, and it goes back out, as the high tide recedes, sand pulls. And in time, inevitably, every single one of those buildings beat on the beach are going to be structurally defective and causing a crisis of what do? We have 3 to 4 million people living on the beach in this whole area up the East Coast. Where are we going to put them? What's going to happen to the hundreds of billions of dollars in real estate that's going to be lost? Not a single discussion, not at the state level, not the county level, not the local level, not the federal level. No one wants to acknowledge the likely outcome of what we're facing. And that's just for starters. Your thoughts, please.
Well, you know, you couldn't have said it better. This is why, in my mind, this is not just a political problem. This is a personal problem. The personal and the political have converged. We are at an historic moment, and we are accelerating towards catastrophe right now for every reason that you just outlined, and I could add a few more to that. But first, I just want to make the point that we are hitting the climate tipping points right now at which survival becomes impossible, becomes obsolete. We have to take action now. Carbon stays in the atmosphere for 100 years, and we are looking at the acceleration of all these devastating things right now. So we got to act. We have to act quickly. We need nothing less than an all-out war. I hate to use that metaphor, but we need a total mobilization right now, like the Manhattan Project, you know, or, you know, like the emergency project to prepare after Pearl Harbor, and factories were converted, car factories were converted into airplane factories to fight that war. We need to be converting our bomber factories into wind tower and solar and geothermal factories. We can do this, but we can't do it if we are being dragged down by the burden of a political establishment that is funded by the corporate fossil fuel nuclear status quo. We're just not going to get there. And as you pointed out, while we had this record-setting year for heat and drought and severe weather and fire, while there were absolute records being broken, you had a Democrat and a Republican who would not utter the word. I was arrested for trying to get into the debate in order to force this debate. I was handcuffed to a chair for 8 hours in order to ensure that these issues would not be raised. And, you know, I went on to be arrested during Sandy, during the Superstorm Sandy. I traveled to East Texas to support the Keystone Trans-Canada pipeline blockade to make the connection between the storm Sandy and the fossil fuels that are driving the storm and the fossil fuel politics, which is essentially at the heart of this problem. because we are at this historic tipping point where either we're going to make it or we're not. We're either going to embrace catastrophe or we're going to embrace a secure and prosperous future. It's like a no-brainer choice, but we have to throw off our political chains in order to do that. There's all kinds of propaganda out there about why you can't do it, but the science and the world around us are very clear. And their messages are loud and strong that we have to throw off the chains of this political establishment that maintains the status quo. We have to throw it off because while these disasters were happening, you had the Obama administration in Doha again thwarting any climate accord, saying there will be no agreement until 2020 when effectively it is too late. That's why it's really important to have an internal revolution in your own thinking to liberate you to actually look at the facts on the ground, look at what we need, look at the Green New Deal, which is how we can solve this right now. And I want to add one more point to Gary's beautiful exposition of what we're up against. And he's absolutely right that the meltdown of the ice sheets is accelerating. It's 5 times faster. It's 500% greater now than it was in the 1990s. It's accelerating. And as Jim Hansen, the foremost climate scientist in this country, recently said, all bets are off. We can no longer say when the ice sheets are just plain gonna collapse. And we could see not just a foot rise in the course of a year, but we could see sea level suddenly skyrocket upward by 10 feet, 20 feet, or even more in the course of a year. You know, how do you like them apples? It's absolutely staggering to think about what could happen, how quickly it could happen, and it's not only the ice and the sea level. You got to think heat waves, too, because that's happening right now. Instead of heat waves of, you know, 110 degrees, which wipes out lots of people, we cannot cope with sustained heat waves at that level, and we've seen 50 and 60,000 people die in a matter of weeks in Europe during the heat waves in the early 2000s. But we can see now heat waves of not 110, not 105, but 130. That's what you're looking at when you get to the predicted warming that we are now expected to see within the next 2 or 3 decades. We are looking at warming, which will not only wipe out people, but it will wipe out our livestock as well as our crops. And in fact, when you get to this predicted warming, now predicted by the World Bank, by the International Energy Association, to be reached somewhere between 2050 and the end of the century, by the time we even get remotely near that degree of warming, we're going to lose at least 40 or 50% of agricultural production. And you're going to wipe out livestock because all it takes is a day or two of that kind of heat. You can't protect them. So you're looking at massive food emergency globally, which, you know, in turn leads to global humanitarian disaster, migration, political chaos, etc. This is not a survivable world. That is the trajectory that we are on with Democrats as well as Republicans. It's very important to get off of that train. Forget that propaganda. Liberate yourself, your children. We are all in the target hairs of the disaster. It's no longer on foreign shores or on somebody else's watch. This is happening to us and to our children during their lives. They are facing catastrophe. And we have an opportunity to turn that around now if we take truly liberated action that breaks away from this politics of fear, moves to the politics of courage, throws off the yoke of the fossil fuel companies, of fracking, of big oil, big coal, and all the rest who are winning the day right now with Democrats and Republicans. We have not seen one hint that they are capable of throwing off these chains. We've got to throw off the chains, as people are doing at the grassroots level right now. As Alice Walker said, the biggest way people give up power is by not knowing we have it to start with. And in fact, we are the ones we've been waiting for. It's time to get organized.
Jill, we're out of time. Thank you very much for being here today. We look forward to an ongoing dialogue, a forum where you can share your insights with others, progressive-minded people who are going to be helping lay down the future, a new road for us. All the best. And the website is jillstein.org. Look forward to our next conversation, Jill.
Thanks so much. Take care. All the best.
And Dr. Jill Stein is a graduate magna cum laude from Harvard, where she received her doctorate from Harvard Medical School. I'm Gary Nall. We're at the end of this program. For those of you who wish to continue for a few moments, we're going to take some talk back now, but we're out of time for our regular stations. Anyone else can go to the telephone and just call up and listen to our extended conversation at 832-280-0066, 832-280-0066, or continue listening on ProgressiveRadioNetwork.com. Now let's say hello to Luann Panessi, who's standing by. Hi, Luann.
Hello, Gary. Well, I'm glad I didn't have my lunch before I listened today. I have an email here from a woman who said that last evening, she says, my mom and I attended a Carnegie Hall recital for our country's leading harp player, Suzanne Clint-Shirova. We're all from Romania, and she said that we were very surprised to see you there. We listen to you regularly. And her questions are these. Number one, what did you think of the performance? And secondly, she said that there were a number of people who approached you, and she and her mom were watching as you talked to people, that you held their hands and looked in their eyes and were talking to them. And she says, and all we can think was how charming it was and how kind it was. And she just wanted to mention that. And she says, why do you do that? Why do you hold their hands with both your hands and look into their eyes as you respond to them? So those are your questions for today.
All right. Yes, last night I did attend a recital down at Carnegie Hall in the recital hall. And she was magnificent. After all, in many people's opinion, my own included, she is the finest in the world at what she does. If you've never heard the harp, and this was a magnificent harp, I'd never seen a harp like this before. And she did, I think, six separate sets. And for me, when she would start to play, I would close my eyes, and her music would transport me to someplace I've been in my life. For example, she made the harp sound like a classical Spanish guitar. And I remember when I was in Madrid in a courtyard with beautiful flowers, sitting, looking out at a man playing classical guitar. And that was just wonderful. Then another time it sounded like violins. And I was remembering being in Versailles in France in the garden early in the morning. I went to get there before the tourists got there. And I didn't care about, I'd already seen Versailles, you know, several times. I wanted to go into the gardens, which I consider some of the most beautiful gardens in the world. And while I was in just walking and the mist was rising, someone was playing the violin. And I could hear this violin. I couldn't see them because it was kind of an echoing. And it was just a haunting theme. And I was visualizing what it would have been like 200 years ago to have been walking in those gardens at that time. So each one of her sets transposed me to a different time and place, and that is what makes that experience unique for me. And the reason that there were a lot of people at intermission who came over and said hello, nice people, lots of artists, and again, all of them that I spoke to were from Romania. And the reason that I hold people's hands is because I believe in looking someone in the eye, holding their hand to make the human connection, because that's when you feel the energy of the person, and that's where you share the energy. Something simple, rather than just standing there looking at someone, I believe in making that contact. That's all the time we have, Luann, and let's say hello to Utrice Lead now. Hi, Utrice.
Hello, Gary. How are you?
Good. What's on today?
Well, we're talking about two major crises that have hit. Experts have located the epicenter in Washington, D.C. It's a massive power outage compounded by a form of legislative terrorism.
Okay, and the power outage is the power, a metaphorical power of those.
Metaphorical power.
See, now, there I'm going to challenge you. And I'm going to challenge you, Beatrice, because you start off assuming these people have power to think. They don't. They have power to say, yes, how much money's in it for me? Go to my room. Here's my key. Bring the Coke. Bring the alcohol. Bring your lobbyist. We'll play. That's the only power these clowns have. We're going to be looking forward to hearing what you have to say.
Thank you.
Eutrice Lead, next.
Come on along and listen to the lullaby of Broadway. The hip hooray and ballyhoo, the lullaby of Broadway. The rumble of the subway train, the rattle of the taxi.